too much clothing, not enough justice, too often a consumer, so rarely a human. It is time to recover. You are invited. But there can be no justice in a limitless society, right? It's like one of the most important things we can do as individuals is to understand what enough is to us.
My name is Esther Pinheiro, the host of Feminisms del Sur, a podcast that echoes the colonial voices from a gender perspective. Today we are going to talk about waste colonialism and how Ghana became fast fashion's dumping ground. Ghana imports about 15 million items of secondhand clothing each week. In 2021, Ghana imported $214 million of used clothes, making it the world's biggest importer. It is important to contextualize that secondhand clothing trade began under colonialism, and while in 1957 marks the independence of Ghana, the colonial power dynamics remain with the global north as the sender and the global south as the receiver of secondhand garments. Just contextualizing here that we don't use global south as a stigmatized term, but in a strategic way to talk about the global south voices in a more empowering way. So, the secondhand clothing trade has decimated Ghana's textile sector, declining from a high of 25,000 jobs in 1975 to 5,000 jobs in 2000. We're talking about 20,000 jobs that were lost. And this kind of culture of waste taught local citizens that clothing is disposable.
My name is Liz Ricketts. I'm the co-founder and director of the OR Foundation. We're a Ghana and USA-based not-for-profit that is working in solidarity with the continental market ecosystem here in Ghana to catalyze what we call a justice-led circular textiles economy.
How can you explain to us what is waste colonialism?
So waste colonialism can be understood in a few different ways. The kind of textbook definition is that it's when a group of people uses waste and pollution to dominate another group of people in their homeland. And this term has been around since 1989, when African nations first expressed concern about the dumping of hazardous waste in low GDP countries by high GDP countries. And with this, waste colonialism is often understood as the domination of land for disposal, right? So sometimes this land, these physical areas that are taken up by this waste, are called sinks. And this, or sacrifice zones, and this is quite visible in the context of Continental Market, which is the largest secondhand clothing market in the world. So Continental not only sees a lot of clothing, Continental sees 15 million garments every single week, but it occupies a lot of space in the center of this Ghanaian capital city, right? It's 20 acres of real estate in the center of the city. And this is land that was owned by local peoples, but then was reassigned by the colonial government. And this is really important because all of this foreign clothing is taking up, you know, a massive amount of valuable real estate in a space that was occupied by a colonial government and controlled by a colonial government. And then there's the history of Continental. So Continental sprung up along a railroad because under colonialism, the British required local people to switch from indigenous dress to Western style dress. So if you wanted to go to school, or if you wanted to go to church, or you wanted to get certain jobs, or you wanted to enter certain rooms, you had to wear Western style dress, a suit and a tie, for instance. And so people coming from villages on the train would get off of the train and find that they could buy these Western style clothes. And that's how Continental started. So Continental, you know, comes from this sort of like artificial demand, this forced compliance with a type of dress code. And that in and of itself is the sort of colonial roots of the secondhand clothing trade here.
Let's give a little bit of perspective here. To explain better the situation in Ghana, there are donated clothes coming from countries as UK, US, China, and all over Europe, these clothes are sold to exporters and importers who then sell them to vendors in Ghana places, such as Cantamanto. Cantamanto is the capital, is in the capital of Ghana, Accra, and is one of the world's largest second-hand clothing markets. We're talking about 15 million garments every week. The problem is that 40% of the average bale leaves Cantamanto as waste, causing a public health crisis and destroying livelihoods and the environment. To mention how this waste is connected to modern colonialism, the Cantamanto community spends $325 million on bales every year, $182 million of which was paid to the Global North exporters in 2020. That means the money doesn't stay in Ghana. There are social implications as well. Girls as young as 9 years old perform back-breaking and sometimes fetter work of head-carrying 55 kilos of bales throughout the market, laboring in modern-day slavery. Sarah Johnson, a correspondent journalist from The Guardian, has reported this story in Ghana in June this year. You can find a link to her article at the description of this podcast. Sarah, how was your experience in walking at Cantamanto? What did you see? How are locals being affected by all this waste?
Cantamanto Market is one of the largest secondhand clothing markets in the world. I spent about 4 hours there and didn't get the impression that I had seen anywhere near all of it. Parts of it are covered, there are no windows, and the passageways between stalls are very narrow. The stalls themselves are small and crowded with clothes, with one, and in some cases two, vendors in each one. It gets very hot walking around. Other parts are outside. There are sections with stalls, but you can also see people washing clothes and laying them out to dry across some railway tracks that run alongside the edge of the market. I came across a storeroom with hundreds of bales full of clothes from China, Canada, the UK, and the US, among other places, waiting to be sold. There was also a lorry loaded with bales of clothes. On sale at the market were items of clothing from various international brands. I looked for brands popular in the UK and found Tesco, H&M, Primark, River Island, and others. At one stall, I found a top from River Island, a UK brand, with a creased cardboard price tag showing that at one point it was on sale for £6 in a Marie Curie charity shop. There's another section of the market which is dedicated to upcycling, where vendors take clothes that have been discarded as waste, cut them up, and make them into other items of clothing. I met one man who was cutting up t-shirts into strips of material to give to seamstresses who would make them into skirts, boxer shorts, knickers, and tops. He told me he received orders from other African countries, including Burkina Faso and Ivory Coast, for items of clothing he made in this way. If it weren't for this section of the market, the problem of waste would be far, far worse than what it already is. You can see signs of waste in and around the market. I saw some items of clothing, including a bra, on the ground outside that had been trodden on and were lying in a puddle. I also saw a man carrying a heap of clothing through the market, presumably to get rid of somewhere. If you talk to vendors, they will tell you how much of a growing problem the issue of waste is. Most of the people I spoke to said 20 to 40% of a bale they buy is full of items of clothing that cannot be sold. Sometimes it's not suitable for Ghanaian tastes and styles, they said. Other times, it has stains, or tears and rips, or a broken zip, for example. One woman came up to me and told me about the bale of denim shorts she had opened earlier that morning. She had had to throw it all away, she said, because there were stains on all the pairs of shorts. She was really angry and said it would prove to be really costly for her. Then she picked out some more pairs of denim shorts with stains on and broken zips to show me. There is more waste in each bale now than in the past. One vendor remembers not throwing away any items of clothing when he first started working at Cantamanto 24 years ago. Now, there are around 70 pieces in each bale that he can't use. Vendors said they were suffering financially and some are going into debt because of the increasing waste that means they have to throw more and more clothes away.
Sarah, how was your experience reporting this story in Cantamanto?
My experience of reporting this story will stay with me for a long time. I saw a glorious side of Ghana, but also an ugly one. Sailing along the River Volta could not be more different from walking along the shores of Kwale Lagoon in Accra, which are lined with rubbish. I didn't realise how many donated clothes from the UK ended up in Ghana. I was brought up to only buy what I really need and to get things which last. I tend to keep things until they're falling apart. Even so, I've been influenced by fast fashion and bought plenty of cheap clothes in my time and cast them aside as trends changed. Hearing vendors in Cantamanto Market talk about their struggles and seeing clothes from the UK there, and then walking around Old Fadama, which is believed to be the largest unsanctioned dump for clothing waste leaving Cantamanto, brought home how much consumerism, fast fashion, and waste is destroying people's lives as well as the environment. I felt ashamed and guilty because so much waste comes from the UK, among other countries. Ghana is no longer under British rule, but somehow we're still abusing and exploiting the country. Now that I'm aware of what's going on, it's even harder for me to throw things away, and I'm definitely rethinking where I should buy new clothes. I've also been left wondering what the solutions are and what I can do personally. Should people still donate clothes? Where to? Should there be some kind of quality check on what we donate? I know the Orr Foundation is campaigning for legislation to compel the fashion industry to help address the environmental catastrophe of dumping vast amounts of textiles in Ghana. But will that happen and when? In the meantime, how can we clean up Old Fadama and the beaches of Accra? All is not lost. There are some incredible people in Ghana, like Yvette, raising awareness of the problem and trying to find solutions. As well as the vendors who repurpose waste garments in Cantamanto, there are also individual fashion designers who create beautiful pieces of clothing from what has been discarded. There is hope.
My name is Yvette Teta and I am on the board of the Orr Foundation, and I was the lead for the Akbechi Living Water Expedition, in which I swam 450 kilometers as part of a swim and research campaign looking at the impact of textile waste and specifically microfibers pollution from secondhand clothing. And this is an expansion of the work that the Orr Foundation had started in Greater Accra, just looking at the impact on water bodies as well as air quality, as well as the environment, of this influx of clothing from the global north to the global south, and specifically to Ghana. In Ghana, we are fortunate enough to have this incredible community of tailors and upcyclers and buyers who deal with a lot of the incoming clothing from the global north, but there's really millions of garments that are arriving every week. And even with all the efforts and the work of the Cantamanto community, we're still finding that around 40% of the clothing that enters Cantamanto still leaves as waste and ends up in landfills. And so what we're trying to do is, you know, first of all, really draw attention to this issue and make a problem that has seemed invisible, been invisibilized, very clear to people, which is also why we did something as spectacular as swimming down the Volta River. And also we are calling for globally accountable extended producer responsibility. So basically saying to those who are producing the masses of clothing as part of the fast fashion industry, that for every item of clothing that is produced, there needs to be an amount of money that goes to the final destination of those clothes, you know, i.e. The Kathmandu community in Accra, for example, to help them, to adequately resource them, to really be able to handle the clothing and also the waste that happens.
And also, Yvette, you did an epic swim down on the river Volta in the capital of Ghana, Accra. You swam 450 kilometers supported by the Our Foundation to highlight the damage done to the country's waterways by this out-of-control trade in second-hand clothes from the global north, showing why it's time for a change. How was this experience and how do you feel it impacted the movement toward stopping waste?
The Betri Living Water Expedition was just an incredible and extremely singular experience. For me, as the swimmer, as the lead, it was a truly intense experience that I spent 7 months training and preparing for. And the 2 months of the swim, which included about 40 days specifically of swimming, were very challenging, but also incredibly beautiful and really allowed me the opportunity to explore more of my country and share more of my country with my fellow country members, but also with the world, and show them how beautiful our environment is and how much we are rich in the resources of people as well as of the environment. And part of the reason for doing this was to kind of provoke more thinking around the issue of fast fashion and its impacts and the impact of textile pollution, and also to give people a reason to care about the issue. So to say, you know, it's such an amazing experience to be able to swim down the Volta River, to be able to experience these places. We should care about taking the action necessary to be able to protect these environments. So I am personally so excited to see how many people around the world have been able to engage with our project and have been activated to want to learn more about the secondhand clothing trade and also to sign the petition to stop waste colonialism. That is, you know, global north countries, wealthier countries, basically using global south countries as a dumping ground without adequately resourcing them. So to sign our petition for globally accountable extended producer reality responsibility and to stop waste colonialism.
I think it's very critical to talk about the secondhand clothing market because it is a good individual action towards the environment, in a sense that we stop buying new clothes that will pollute even more the planet, and also considering sometimes the terrible working conditions for those who make clothes. Just trying to think about what are your thoughts on this, Liz? That is to say, how can we stop waste effectively and how secondhand clothing has been impacting Ghana's waters?
So I think this is a really good question. And I think I would start by saying that we don't need to stop waste per se. So waste is natural. Byproducts are natural. All organisms create waste. We as human beings, we create waste. We have byproducts from our bodies. The problem is that the byproducts that we're creating through our industrial systems are not able to be metabolized by nature, are not aligned with nature, right? So we can understand that the pace at which we are creating things and the materials that we're using to create things is creating this pile of waste that makes visible to us our separation from nature. So what I mean by that is polyester, right? I mean, polyester is the origin of fast fashion. Polyester is a material that we can make at an inhumane or unnatural pace, whereas natural materials like cotton, hemp, wool, silk, these are literally plants and animals. They have seasons, they have limits. There can be no justice in a limitless society, right? Like, one of the most important things we can do as individuals is to understand what enough is to us. And to understand that limits are not a bad thing. To consume within limits, to live within limits, can open us up to having a more full life, actually. You know, I think that sometimes when we tell people to buy less, they think that you're telling them to be less of a human, because again, we've equated this idea of consumption with everything that we are as a human being, but that's not true. When we say to buy less, we're inviting you to have more of a life, right? Like, we don't realize how much time we spend consuming stuff. Consumption has become our form of entertainment. We don't even realize that when we're shopping, we're laboring for other people. You know, when you're scrolling on your phone, you know, someone is making money off of that. And then when you buy something, obviously someone is making money off of that. But we spend a ridiculous amount of time consuming things. It's how, you know, we spend time with friends, with family, and we need to stop that, because it's not fulfilling. You know, consumption has kind of become this artificial substitute for the things we really need. We need a hug, we need to have a difficult conversation, but instead of doing those things, instead of confronting that, instead of asking someone for a hug, we awkwardly turn to our phone, you know, and start scrolling and buy something. And it's really unhealthy for us. And it would be better, you know, for you to ask for a hug, to go to the park, find other ways to spend time with your friends and with the people that you love. And this isn't to criticize anyone, right? Like, there are patterns in society that teach you that you have more power as a consumer than you do as a citizen. And we always use this example of Black Friday in the United States. So in 2016 in the United States, more people shopped Black Friday weekend than voted in our presidential election. And that was a very important presidential election. And again, it can be, that can sound very critical, and that's not the point. The point is that you look at the structures that are in place, right? So for instance, in America, we don't have voting day off of work, but most people will have Black Friday weekend off of work. And so over time, these sort of signals build up, and they tell you, you have power as a consumer, you don't have power as a citizen, right? And so at some point we just accept it, and we don't realize that we move through life with that belief. So we really need to wake up.
Talking about actions and solutions, I'm going to bring a term which might be new for many people. It's called EPR, which stands for Extended Producer Responsibility.
EPR is a policy where brands have to pay a fee to cover the cost of waste management. Now, unfortunately, the only EPR policy that exists right now is in France for textiles. There are EPR policies for all types of commodities, for batteries, for cars, etc. There's over 400 globally, but only one for textiles, and that's in France. And unfortunately, this policy to us is a waste colonialism policy, and essentially put waste colonialism into law, because this policy collects this fee from brands. In France, it's an average of 1 penny, which is nowhere near enough to cover the true cost of waste management. But then the most important thing is that of all the clothing that French collectors and charities and companies collect, is around 34% of the clothing that's put on the market. They export 80% of it to the continent of Africa, but then keep all of the money, which is right now around 51 million euros a year. They keep all of that in France. So they collect the money. The money is supposed to go towards waste management, but then they export 80% of the clothing. The money does not come with the clothing, and they keep the money. So for us, it's kind of like rewarding people twice, right? It's like there's already this social capital in the global north around donating your clothes and doing the right thing and you know, giving your clothes to someone in need, that again comes from this sort of colonial mythology that makes us not question what really happens to it. And then now on top of it, these EPR policies are rewarding people in the global north again financially, even though it's not changing the flow of the material. The waste is still ending up here. People here are still doing all of the work. But then it's also adding this like social capital of saying like we're doing the right thing, we have this policy, etc. So what we're saying is like if these policies continue to exist, they cannot be waste colonialism policies. Like we can't use them to perpetuate waste colonialism and make it even worse. We need to use these policies to stop waste colonialism. We need to use them to redistribute power and wealth, to redistribute these resources. If brands are paying a fee for waste management and clothing continues to be exported to places like Contamanto, then money should come with it to support the community like Contamanto. So for us, that's key to, or it's one step, you know, towards stopping waste colonialism.
Liz, why can't we just ban secondhand clothing?
When we're talking about colonialism, we're talking about power dynamics. And when we're talking about power dynamics, we're talking about choice. Who has access to decision making? Who has more choice? And in this scenario here in Ghana, people do not have a lot of choices, right? So people listening to this might wonder, you know, why don't you just ban the secondhand clothing? Why even fight for these EPR policies? Just ban it. It seems to be causing so much harm, right? But here's the thing, okay? The secondhand clothing trade essentially decimated the local textile industry here in the 90s. So if you ban secondhand clothing, A, you have 30,000 people who would be out of a job. There's not jobs for them to transition into. And B, it would not be local business or local industry that would benefit. It would not, you know, it would not lead to value add in the country or to money staying in the country. It would create a void that would be filled by foreign fast fashion, new foreign fast fashion. And that's not any better. And for us, it's worse, not only from an environmental footprint, which I think is, you know, what the Global North kind of always is talking about, is that a used garment, a resale garment is better than a new one from an environmental perspective. Yes, that's 100% true. We totally believe that. But for us, again, environmental or material reasons are not the only reasons to care about something. For us, it's also about looking at social structures, right? So in Contamanto, because you have individual items, you know, anyone who's been through to a thrift store understands the hunt and thrill of going thrifting, and you know, everything is mixed together. It's a distributed economy in Contamanto, where you have 30,000 people working here, each of them able to buy a bale, sell individual items, you know, kind of end up specializing in something. Again, if we ban secondhand clothing today, right now, it wouldn't be local industry that would benefit. It would be foreign fast fashion that would benefit. And that would also get rid of this upcycling culture, this culture of creativity, and not just be, it would also be worse for the environment.
In its website, the OR Foundation believes that EPR has significant potential to catalyze a justice-led transition from a linear textile economy to a circular textile economy. How is this possible?
And justice-led circularity can be defined quite simply as a circular economy that prioritizes the prosperity of the people who have been most burdened by the linear economy. Because we're guided by this belief that circularity can't just be about material. It can't just be about reusing, recycling, keeping material out of landfill. It has to also be about redistributing power and wealth so that we can have a diversity of thought and so that the power is more equally distributed. Because in a circular economy, if we're talking about stuff moving around a circle, then inherently that means that there can be no bottom or top of that value chain. And so to help us with that, we're guided by a few phrases. One of them, I'm sure you're all familiar with the traditional three R's, which are reduce, reuse, recycle, and those are all material based. So we've added our three R's, which are reckoning, recovery, and reparations. And one of our mottos is too much clothing, not enough justice, too often a consumer, so rarely a human. It is time to recover. You are invited.
Is there a circular economy in Cantamento?
The crazy thing is that Cantamento is the best model of circularity. So yes, we have this waste, but Cantamento has two truths. Cantamento is also the largest reuse and upcycling economy in the world. This community of 30,000 people successfully reuse, repair, and upcycle 25 million garments at a minimum every single month. That's massive. That's way more than any online resale platform, Depop, ThredUp, you name it. None of them are doing anywhere close to that amount of recirculation, to use Global North terminology. And yet, Cantamento is not celebrated for the work that it's done because it's only seen as the story about waste, because the waste overshadows the work that the community actually does and the expertise that the community actually holds. And what's really scary is that, you know, this waste and the debt that people are in to buy these clothes and to do this work for the Global North, it's killing the industry. And so we're losing these skill sets. We're diminishing the value of the skill set here in Ghana at the very same moment that the Global North is celebrating the exact same thing and rewarding the exact same thing. So there's, again, these two very different worlds, and this is where colonialism comes in of, you know, people here have been doing the work of circularity. It's inherent in the culture. They might not know the words that the Global North has decided suddenly to use to capitalize on the work that they do, but they still do it. The impact is there, right? And so it's also just incredibly unfair to have this situation where you have the people who are doing the work who are never acknowledged and never supported simply because of this power dynamic and, you know, this control that the Global North has over the narrative. So this also really, really needs to change.
We're talking about the secondhand clothing from the Global North and where they will go. But how about the clothes from Ghana? Where will they go?
The hope is that Cantamento can exist, still exist, as a reuse and upcycling economy, but primarily for locally worn clothes. Because I think one of the things that gets left out of this conversation, or again, you know, because of the sort of like colonial mythology that we have, where we don't realize that people here in Ghana and throughout the continent have clothes, that people are not naked. So everyone here in Ghana right now is walking around wearing clothes. So where are those clothes going to go, right? The Cantamento market that takes up 20 acres in the middle of their city is for foreign material. And so I think one of the biggest injustices from my perspective is that you have this incredible skill set, you have this incredible culture of upcycling and creativity that is being 100% applied to a foreign problem, to solve a foreign problem. But then meanwhile, there's also waste locally. So what we need to do is to empower this community and then to transition it so that the material that's being handled can be locally worn clothes, so that people can go to Kantamanto, take their own clothes there, resell them, upcycle them, and then hopefully with these EPR funds, we can also develop waste management infrastructure to handle the inevitable, which is that not everything will be resold or not everything will be upcycled. There will be waste, and we need to build recycling technologies here in Ghana to revitalize the local textile industry and to help us manage this material. And that can be, you know, as a nonprofit, we recycle material actively. So we have a material R&D department. And when we say recycling, we're not just talking about turning it back into clothes, but, you know, looking at other opportunities. So for instance, we make fiber board, we make mops, but basically how can we keep these materials out of landfill? How can we create dignified employment and living wage jobs? And how can we create a system here where everything kind of cascades into one another? So the EPR funds can be used to really facilitate the development of that infrastructure and to ensure that people are no longer going into debt doing this work.
Considering this context that involves environment, capitalism, fashion market, what are some individual actions that we can take?
So one, you can stop buying, don't buy anything new for a year. You know, this isn't, you not buying anything new for a year isn't going to solve the waste crisis, but it's going to help you to detox from this overconsumption kind of like treadmill that everyone is on. And, you know, part of that, unsubscribe from all of the newsletters and the brands and all of the companies sending you, you know, advertisements every day. And then during that year, choose 5 things from your closet that you want to do something new with. So maybe you want to learn how to dye. Maybe you want to learn how to repair the crotch on your jeans. Whatever it is, I really encourage you to take an item to a local tailor, work with a designer to upcycle something. And part of this is economic, you know, understanding that if you want to have a pair of jeans repaired in your own local community, it might cost you more to repair them than it did for you to buy them in the first place. And that should send you a strong signal of exactly what is wrong with the system, right? And it should also show you what we need to really build a new system. And that if we want to localize the industry, if we want to keep things in circulation locally, we are going to have to end up, you know, paying for these services and building a new economy around us and building these skill sets back up. And then the second thing that you can do right now is that you can support our campaign. So you can go to stopwastecolonialism.org. You can sign the petition. And if you hear, you know, that EPR policies are being discussed in your local community, in your country, then please make sure that these policies become globally accountable. Please help us fight to ensure that the fee that is collected, the money that is collected, ends up coming to communities like Kantamanto so that we can establish infrastructure here, use that money to take people out of debt so that we can build a local circular textiles economy.